Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyar. Fred Williams is on assignment. As I get to interact with some of the world's greatest scientists, every once in a while, I'll hear, like from Dr. Walt Brown from Phoenix, Arizona, Bob, you're in Denver. Do you know Eric Donovan? And from Kevin Lee up in Washington, the Olympic Peninsula, Bob, you know Eric Donovan. So I keep hearing this Eric Donovan guy's name. And I hear about a new DVD on creation science about the Grand Canyon. And one of the folks involved in producing this on the Grand Canyon is Eric Donovan, and he's from Denver. So I give him a call, and Eric, welcome to Real Science Friday.
I'm very honored with the introduction there.
Well, these guys are some of the best in the world, I think, and they speak so highly of you, Eric. And so I called you the day that this brand new DVD was being released, or maybe even before it was being released.
It was Grand Canyon Puzzle on the Plateau. And Mike Snavely,
that's right,
over at natureofcreation.com,
and he
has produced that.
He produced that DVD, and he's presenting Walt Brown's explanation of the formation of the Grand Canyon.
Exactly.
And so you were the animator for that project.
Yes.
So I called you, and I think you had said Walt called you previously.
Yeah, I had messages on my machine from both of you guys. So I brought that unopened DVD that was the preview.
You hadn't even seen it to my home.
Yep. And we sat down and watched it together.
So with my wife, Cheryl, and our boys.
Yep.
And what a great time and what an honor to watch that DVD with the animator. And so one of the things I'd like to do today is to talk about what is it like to animate a creation project or really any science project, but then also to talk about some of the issues, to talk about Walt Brown. What is it about Walt Brown that attracted you to his work? I'd like to find out about your professional background. How did you get into animation? And then also spiritually, how did you end up becoming a creationist and a Christian? Of course. Not sure quite where to begin, but how about with this project, the Grand Canyon? Tell me about that project and your part in it.
The year before working with Mike, I had gone out on to a trip with Walt out into the Grand Canyon. And on this trip, we had several geologists, and we went to the key points that Walt bases his theory off of. If we have this funnel here in this area, how would that have formed? Standing up on the edge of the Marble Canyon, and I actually found a piece of petrified coral right there on the edge of this.
Petrified coral,
yeah.
There at Marble Canyon. Now, we have, with our family, we've rafted in Marble Canyon.
Mm-hmm.
We've gone to the Grand Canyon. I've gone there over a dozen times. And so when I go, I look to try to comprehend how the secular world says it formed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the secular geologist increasingly are disagreeing with their own theory. I think that's common today.
Well, and one of the things that I think that they overlook a lot is when you're standing up there on the edge of Marble Canyon, you're looking down at a fantastic canyon that's amazing to
leading
think of it
into Grand Canyon.
Formed.
So before you get to Grand Canyon.
Before you get to Grand Canyon, yes. It's the southern running bit of the river that's starting up in this Marble Canyon area that you see a large funnel when you look at a map.
The funnel, right.
Yeah, and see, that's
I've
the
linked
thing
to photos is, of it in my debates, like with Aaron Ra, this atheist guy.
Well, when you're standing there, though, what the impressive thing to me is to actually look behind you. There's all this dirt that was removed before this canyon can even start getting carved out.
Right.
And everybody looks over that.
Oh.
And
so that the Grand Canyon itself is about 800 cubic miles of rock that's just gone.
Mm-hmm.
But above that is what I think you're talking about.
Exactly. You have to remove that before.
The Great Denudation, mm-hmm. about 2,000 cubic miles of dirt and rock that's just gone. It's all gone.
Opened up. And as you're standing along that edge, the another thing that you'll notice as you go back towards those cliffs that are way off in the distance is that you're a little bit higher than where the edge is over near that cliff, which means that that area was removed, and now you're standing on an edge that has been uplifted.
Mm.
Uplifted, cracked open, and split
right
to create that canyon, rather than having a
a river.
Little river eroded it for eons.
Right. In fact, the side canyons that come off of that are interesting because they're called barbed canyons because they go in the wrong direction.
Yeah, they go against the flow.
Against the flow, which when you have a drainage system and everything is draining, say, into the Mississippi, which goes to the mouth of the Mississippi in the Gulf of Mexico, well, everything is heading in generally the same direction. You don't typically have rivulets that are running in the opposite direction, forming acute angles with the flow of the river. Mm-hmm. Well, here at Marble Canyon, they're all barbed canyons. They're coming the wrong way.
Yep.
And Walt explains why this is, because the Grand Canyon didn't form by the Colorado River eroding it over millions of years.
The Colorado River runs down that canyon because that's the lowest point now.
Right.
But
the canyon formed the river. The river didn't form the canyon.
Yeah. And the barbed canyons were formed by the bank stored water of huge lakes that ended up, that was what took off the huge layer that I was speaking about. When you're standing on the edge of that canyon, looking back toward the cliffs behind you, you had to remove all that sediment first before you could ever start opening up this canyon.
Mm-hmm. So Walt's theory, which I think is gaining acceptance even outside of creation circles, is that there were Great Lakes.
Two huge ancient lakes.
Right. Like the Great Lakes we have at Lake Huron and Michigan and Superior, like those lakes, Erie.
And the one that he calls Grand Lake would dwarf those lakes.
And covering a good chunk of Colorado and neighboring states, just barely over into
Utah,
neighboring states.
New Mexico.
And so a natural dam was breached, as has happened elsewhere, that's well documented.
Mm-hmm. In that funnel area.
In the funnel area.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that rapidly, within hours and days, and that flood also undercut a second massive lake. And the two of them poured out together and carved out the Grand Canyon.
Yeah. And where you see the river take the drastic turn toward the west is right near where what Walt theorizes is Hopi Lake was undercut.
Right.
And that spilling out changed the course of that flow from traveling south down to traveling west.
And so it's also amazing. So this is Walt's theory, and his theory is on paper. So on paper, you could write anything. It doesn't have to make sense.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Right? Then enter Eric Donovan, because Mike Snavely comes to you and says, can we animate this? So as an animator, what is it like when you conceive of this project, and how do you go about your task?
Very scientifically, because what I started from was digital elevation models of the entire area. I wanted to see what would the shape of those lakes really be if I'm just to take what's left over now and put in a water level at that. What's the shoreline going to look like? Is it going to match up with what Walt theorizes?
Mm-hmm.
Because if it doesn't, when I throw this together in my three-dimensional scene, then I'm going to have a little red flag come up. But lo and behold, I get the digital elevation models, start looking for the bank lines, and it matches up exactly with what was initially in his work. Now, the graphic that I came up with for showing Grand Lake, Hopi Lake, and the whole entire Grand Canyon is now the main graphic in Walt's Grand Canyon section.
In his book,
mm-hmm.
the 8th edition, eventually he's working on the 9th edition.
Yeah.
Hopefully that'll be his legacy that he leaves to the world. But the 8th edition, we just ordered another case of books because it's just so extraordinarily fabulous. Mm-hmm. And there's a chapter which is new, I think, to the 8th edition, which is the origin of the Grand Canyon.
Exactly. So what you're viewing right there is the same 3D model that was animated in Mike Snavely's production and has actually also been seen in a Grizzly Adams production called The Longevity Secret.
Now, do you recognize the name Dr. Ed Holroyd? Because he's a Denver area scientist. He's worked for the government for years, atmospheric scientist, reading telemetry, and especially focusing on reading the Earth's surface from satellite imagery. He teaches this, in fact, for decades, and he's worked in this field for decades. I believe Dr. Holroyd worked with Walt Brown on looking at the boundaries of Grand Lake and Hopi Lake. Do you know?
I've heard his name before, and I'm not exactly sure if that's the exact name that I know that helped with that. But in my work, you know, I actually put in a water level at the correct elevation that Walt specified. And I basically have a plane that goes for states of what the water level would be. And you can actually see the bank lines as it hits the remaining mountains.
This is very exciting. And your animations, so you use a computer and you tell it, okay, now fill this up with water, now drain the water. And you see, because gravity then is sort of like the major factor.
And in this case, because you have these lakes up on the Colorado Plateau, you have a lot of energy stored in this raised lake. So you have a lot of potential energy that once it's released at that funnel of the Marble Canyon, that began the whole process of carving out the Grand Canyon. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's now back up. Because for one, when watching this Grand Canyon Puzzle on the Plateau DVD with you, what an honor it was for me because you were involved in the production of this thing. It's a brand new creation resource just coming out on the market, and we must have stopped it about a dozen times.
Oh, it at least took 2.5 to 3 hours to get through that.
My kids tell us, Dad, we watched that hour and a half video in 3 hours. they still say that to this day when I told them I was going to be interviewing you. So, Eric, when I realized that Walt's theory, which makes sense when you read it on paper, talking to you, you were another witness. The Bible says 2 or 3 witnesses, different testimony helps to confirm a matter. Mm-hmm. And so you provided a significant secondary testimony to the truth of this understanding of how the Grand Canyon formed. Now, the problems with the standard model are so severe. For example, you stand on the South Rim or the North Rim, you look across the canyon, and the boundaries have these flat boundaries between the strata.
Oh, yeah.
Allegedly, it took millions of years to lay down this series of strata a mile deep.
And a key in that is that there's no erosion in between those layers. For a million years, there was no erosion.
Where's the erosion?
Are you going to suspend belief and say that there's no erosion for millions of years?
No snow, no ice storms, no wind, no animals burrowing holes, no tree, forest roots, all that. Mm-hmm. And in some of those, and we document this using government reports, where they say there are strata missing. Like you go over in Africa, and they say, well, the Ordovician or the Silurian, it's there, but it's not in the Grand Canyon. So they'll say, well, right here between these two layers, there's a missing 100 million years. And you say, really? I mean, think of the erosion since the time of Christ. You go to Ephesus and just look at the erosion since the Apostle Paul was there. It boggles the mind how much the land changes.
Exactly.
And they want us to believe that 100 million years passed and there was no deposition and no erosion.
Apparently no weather at all.
No weather. Right. It turned to mercury or something. It's ludicrous, of course. And then those massive side canyons, which themselves are a mile deep, and some of them, the Grand Canyon, I think, is 277 miles long. Some of those are miles long. They don't have Colorado rivers running into the Grand Canyons.
No, dried up.
Right. So what formed them? What did the river just take right and left turns every few miles?
Do a little jog and then come back on itself?
Exactly. Right. It is ludicrous. And so Walt Brown explains that when the canyon was formed, there was a massive drainage channel for all the groundwater. And that's why all the Indians disappeared. All the Indians that no longer live in that part of the country.
Yeah, say like the Anastasi. The Hopi Indians actually have a legend of the mountains being the source of their water. Mm-hmm. And actually, when I was on this trip with Walt in Page, Arizona, there was a lady there that worked at the hotel that we were staying at, and she was a Hopi Indian. And she was asking us what we were doing. You know, I'm running around with video cameras and we're interviewing Walt and all these geologists. And she starts asking some questions. And in the process, I start mentioning the fact that the Indians actually have a legend of there being water that would come from the walls. And she goes, yes, my my grandfather, he told me stories like this.
Yeah.
I'm like, really? And she actually wanted to go and make a recording of her grandfather mm-hmm. telling these stories because she realized that that oral tradition was going to be lost with her unless she does. Mm. And in the process of that, she also mentioned to me that her and her brother used to go and play on the top of this plateau that is a little bit further down in that Marble Canyon area. And there was petrified wood up there. Mm. And she said that they were large petrified.
Large, like some trees.
Trees.
And then a lot she of it's actually gone, would, right?
And most of it's been taken off of there by helicopter, we find out later on from her brother. But she gave me directions on where to go to see this. Mm. Her and her brother used to go to the top of this plateau, and they were to be watching the sheep for her grandmother. And the way that they would be allowed to play is they would take them up to that plateau, and there's only one way up. So once they blocked that one way up, they knew that the sheep would roam around and they're not going to go anywhere. Right. So then they could run around and play. She told stories about going and gathering petrified wood on the top of this plateau and pretending to make a little petrified fire and and whatnot. So we went up there. We actually found some petrified wood. That photograph that I took of that petrified wood is in Walt's book in the Grand Canyon section.
And
he describes, you know, how would you get that? So, up here on top of a plateau.
Yeah, and the cliff dwellings at Mesa Verde, when you go there today, their exhibit says that it's a mystery why these people left and never returned, because if it was warfare or if it was a plague or whatever, they left behind these cliff dwellings. I mean, nice homes dug into solid rock. You could live there today, but the water was gone.
If you notice when you look at those ruins, when you're driving around throughout that part of the country, you see all these dark stains that run down the cliff. And I remember as a child going to that area and thinking, oh, that must have been smoke stains or something from back when they lived there.
Yeah.
Actually, it's magnesium stains, and magnesium is carried by the water that used to be running over that.
Wow.
And I would say that those cliff dwellings probably had their water source right there.
Right.
And it was feeding an area where they could fish down beneath that.
The water table was high because we're talking about the first couple centuries after the flood. And so you have a mile or so deep of sediments and it's water saturated.
Surely.
And just like today, we're still emptying aquifers.
Oh yeah.
We're draining them. They were filled during the global flood and they're being drained gradually all over the world, which is a matter for civil engineers to figure out what are we going to do. But so here you have American Indians over a huge chunk of the Southwest, and we have evidence that they lived there for centuries and then they had to leave because the water was gone. And we know why the water was gone, because now there was a drainage, and that's what formed the side canyons going into the Grand Canyon, the erosion of all that water draining rapidly into the Grand Canyon.
And they also have another story that they tell about a great flood, which would be the great flood that formed that Grand Canyon. The story goes that they hear this loud noise and they send out scouts to go see what was the issue. And what they find is this dam has broken and there is a river now where there was no river. And they come back and report this. And so all these little side stories of cultures that corroborate the story.
The global flood.
The global flood. And then also just this one little minute portion of Walt's theory, which is how the Grand Canyon formed. There's, you know, there's all the evidence for there having been a global flood, one, but then two, here's a story from the Hopi Indians that corroborates how Walt theorizes the Grand Canyon formed.
Yeah. We're speaking with Eric Donovan, a Denver area animator who has been involved in different projects animating Walt Brown's hydroplate theory and the formation of the Grand Canyon. What happened in your life, Eric, that brought you to this point? When did you find out about Jesus Christ, the Bible, as God's word, that God created us, we didn't evolve from animals? How did that happen?
I was raised a Christian, and like many people's stories that, you know, as you enter into high school, you pretty much just have to stop talking about your beliefs when you get into the science classroom, because they would just sort of laugh at or refute you. Many people continually challenged me on my beliefs, and it's one of the things that nearly shook my faith. How could the earth have been covered in water? Where did the water go?
Right.
Where did it come from
right.
beforehand?
Yeah.
And all this. And I had a hard time with that. And so I started to seek out answers. And for years I searched. And then at one point I heard about a conference that Walt Brown was putting on here at Crossroads Church of Denver.
And Pastor Tom Stipe?
Exactly, yeah. Mm. He had brought him out.
I'm so thankful went there he very, did that years ago. That's before I knew about Walt Brown. I'm so thankful that happened.
I am too. And I went there skeptical. This guy is really going to have to convince me. Mm. Mm-hmm. I sat there for, because it was a 3-day event. He did a little intro on Friday, and then there was like a long conference on Saturday and finished up on Sunday. By the end, I was convinced that there is no other way that this earth could look the way that it does right now with those layers we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. There's no way that the Grand Canyon could have formed unless that happened first. Mm-hmm. And then I think I truly believe that Walt Brown is correct about how the Grand Canyon formed.
Yeah.
With the draining of those two lakes.
When we talk about Walt and the creation movement, we say for years we've said that Henry Morris was the Copernicus of the creation movement. Walt Brown is the Isaac Newton. He is the Isaac Newton.
I would agree. I mean, because I believe that Walt Brown is one of the most brilliant men on the face of this planet right now. Mm-hmm. And I mean, just like Galileo in his day, I'm afraid that what will happen is that people will really delve into and be convinced of his work once he's gone. Mm. And I just feel privileged that I have the opportunity to work with him and talk with him and, you know, go on these trips with him. When I do any of these animations, I talk with him multiple times per day on the details of it.
Yeah, Lord willing, I'll be going to visit him at his home where he works in January. He is perhaps reopening a project he put on the back burner about the timing of the flood established from scientific observations outside of the biblical chronology, which is our most reliable source. Can you date it accurately through external scientific observations? And so I've considered it one of the great honors of my life to be able to interact with Walt on his new chapters as they come out, the chapter on the origin of radioactivity and the Grand Canyon chapter, and just...
And I'm just itching to animate so many of those ideas, because I've sat with him in his office and he's spoken to me about some of that before he started to publish it.
There's so much, right?
Oh, there's so much.
And it to help people understand it.
Yeah, and it becomes clear in my mind exactly how you can explain it.
Right.
Because you can unwrap it with animation and you can explain it in ways that you can't in the written word.
So you have a real world job where you don't get to do this 40, 60 hours a week. You have to do your regular job, right?
I do.
To pay the bills.
And a little bit about my background. I've done animation for, and in these cases are generally for engineering companies. I did a lot of work with the Department of Energy.
New York State, weren't you involved with taking radioactive waste when they...
Yeah, they were developing the first vitrification facility that went online. And in the process, what they do is they take high-level waste and they smelt it down into glass so that it can no longer flow.
Leak out of
tubs. No longer leak. Well, once they were done draining these 2 1-million-gallon tanks, they needed to go in and inspect these to make sure that, you know, once everything is glass, there's still not something left over that could potentially leak out of these tanks. And so they designed a robot. So I was involved in taking engineering companies from all around the country and Canada's designs and throwing them together into a 3D model that would allow them to interact with this model before building it and be able to actually go into. Yeah. So, and then they sent me the drawings for the tanks. I modeled them 3-dimensionally. Now we can actually interact with this thing and we can see if it will do what they need it to do. So it was made to clamp onto the columns that support the roof of the tank and maneuver around.
1 million-gallon tanks.
Exactly.
Right.
And then have a arm that can run a hose if they needed to run something out of a corner. They had a camera on it, and then they had its ability to do some gripping if it needed to pick an item up.
We're about out of time, but so you are a professional animator. Mm-hmm. And then Eric Donovan, to use your talents and your experience for the gospel of Jesus Christ and to teach people that God did make us and the Bible is reliable because the Bible explains the world the way we see it. That is such a thrill for me to see somebody who's taking this scientific engineering type background and using it to increase people's faith.
Yeah, and it's a passion of mine to bring Walt Brown's work to life, because I think that this is the next big thing.
It really is. I mean, well, to encourage you, Eric.
How the continents move.
Right. I mean, it's extraordinary, right?
He can mathematically do it. And you know what? You don't even have to talk about the creation.
You don't.
You just talk science
from the physics.
You just, yeah.
Right. And our boys are homeschooled, and they use some of the leading curriculum by Alpha Omega Publishing. And to understand the Mid-Oceanic Ridge, they have on their computer, switched on Schoolhouse, they show the Walt Brown animation of the hydroplate theory explaining the crust of the Earth cracking in this mid-oceanic ridge wrapping around the whole Earth like a seam on a baseball.
I actually did an animation showing that crack forming. One of the first things I did as I was starting to develop a relationship with Walt, and I asked him initially, you know, where do you think that crack began? Then, you know, here's my scientific mind in the background always thinking, I'm going to test all of this out. Because there's something interesting about the mid-oceanic ridge is that it actually intersects itself at one point.
Right.
You can actually see it if you look at Google Earth. Yeah. And you turn it around down to like near Madagascar. Mm-hmm. You can see where, you know, as the crack bends around underneath the southern tip of Africa, it starts to come back up north and westerly direction. And it intersects a crack that would have been coming the opposite direction that goes on up and basically ends at the Gulf of Aden. And when a crack hits another crack, if you've ever seen a windshield, one winter time, I saw a crack that developed very quickly on my windshield because of the heat change. It was developing very fast. And, you know, if you ever perpendicularly hit a crack with another crack, it stops.
Right.
So I started off the crack where he gave me, which was pretty close to where Alaska is now. And I set it loose to go in both directions at the same speed. And I wanted to see, do you think it will cross? You know, because if he's wrong about where his location is, then the crack would continue up and not end there at Madagascar, and the crack would be going the other way. Mm. Well, and I watched the animation play out in time, and sure enough, just in the nick of time, just before this crack would have actually beat it to that same location, it passes by, and lo and behold, there it stops. Right.
That is exciting.
And then it continues on up and peters out, you know, over near the Gulf of Aden.
And so I'm so excited that here are tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of kids learning about the hydroplate theory and Walt Brown's work through the Christian homeschool curriculum of Alpha Omega. So there's things happening. It's getting out there, Eric.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Thanks to you and maybe a few hundred others. So we all do our part, right?
Yeah.
So we are out of time. But do you have a website that people could find out about what you're doing?
www.lobosanimation.com. That would be LOBOS.
Animation.com.
IMATION.
And so we'll put that in our show summary so people could find out about you. And I wish is that you could be funded to work on this full time.
And that is my dream right now. I have a script ready and, you know.
Ready to go, right? And we are out of time. So, Eric Donovan, may God bless you. Thank you so much.